This is Africa News Tonight on the Volga.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight. This is a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves some technical issues. I'm your host, Yehi Swuhib, in Washington. Coming up...
Because of the African economy still relies too much, too heavily on the export of raw material, the impact of the global crisis will be a disaster, I think, for the continent.
That was Laurent Bossard, who heads the Sahel and West Africa Club of the Paris-based Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. Details coming up also. South Africa's economic recovery hangs in the balance after the country just suffered a double blow. And citizens of Mali voted yesterday in a long-delayed parliamentary election. We'll have these stories and more in this special VOA Africa program. Here is our top story. Experts are calling for massive international aid for Africa to weather the economic and public health fallout of the coronavirus. The pandemic, some say, is also a wake-up call for African governments to realize long-needed reforms. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports.
A number of African economies are among the world's fastest growing in recent years. However, analysts fear COVID-19, which was slow to arrive on the continent, will end that. The United Nations Economic Commission for Africa estimates the coronavirus has already cost the region $29 billion and could more than half its GDP for reasons including supply chain disruptions. Here's ECA Director for Eastern Africa, Mama Keita, on CNBC Africa.
You have several other losses that are linked to that. The slowing down of the activities comes with reduced public revenue for the government. It comes with reduced profitability for businesses, lowered investment.
Also lost jobs and revenues on a continent where many live on the edge. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is asking G20 leaders for $150 billion in emergency funding for Africa, describing the virus as an existential threat to its economies. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealed for an initial $2 billion in international aid for the immediate health needs of the world's most vulnerable countries. Many are African. He noted the sum is a fraction of the massive coronavirus rescue packages richer nations are putting together for themselves.
No African government has the financial means to engage in such programs to protect their economies. Moreover, there is a concern that developed countries, the richest countries, have less and less financial means to help Africa.
Laurent Bossard heads the Sahel and West Africa Club of the Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
Because of the African economy still relies too much, too heavily on the exports of raw material, the impact of the global crisis will be a disaster, I think, for the continent.
Africa's tourism sector will likely be hard hit by the crisis, so too foreign investment and trade. Oil exporting countries such as Nigeria, Algeria, and Angola are already reeling from plummeting crude prices. Experts say other key African exports such as cocoa, rubber, and timber will also be affected.
This crisis should be for the African countries, the African governments, the occasion to engage in proactive policies of economic diversification. They cannot afford to keep so dependent of raw material exports.
However, Bossard and others say the outside world must step up, not just with humanitarian aid, but with broader support for African economies. How the continent deals with the pandemic is not just an African problem, they say, but will also affect how the world recovers from the health and economic consequences of COVID-19. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
South Africa's economic recovery now hangs in the balance after the country suffered a double blow, first from the effects of the COVID-19, then from a Moody's downgrade to junk status, simply meaning below investment grade. Experts warn this could be devastating to the economy. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
When South Africa reported its first case of coronavirus on the 5th of March, the country was already in a technical recession, a term referring to a decline in economic activity. This was further worsened last Thursday when the government ordered all businesses except essential services to shut down for 21 days to curb the spread of the coronavirus. On Friday, Moody's became the third major ratings agency to downgrade South Africa to junk status, a level below investment grade. Secretary General of the South African Federation of Trade Unions, Zwelinze Mavhavhi, says that will cause untold suffering to the working class and cause further unemployment.
South Africa's GDP is not growing. The economy has not been growing. Unemployment has been getting worse. Inequalities are getting worse.
Foreign policy expert Bob Wekesa says South Africa has been put in a very difficult situation. He says one source of help could be the BRICS Development Bank, but that BRICS countries are all channeling resources into fighting COVID-19.
The key or the kingpin within the BRICS formation is China. And China itself has been battered quite heavily. And so it will have very little wiggle room to actually boost other nations, whether through the BRICS formation, through the New Development Bank, or directly.
Others say South Africa has no option but to approach the International Monetary Fund, IMF, for a bailout. However, economist Mhlanganisi Madlongolwana says the country's economic structure is too weak to handle IMF's austerity measures.
We have quite a substantial social net, and that's the first thing to go. And when that goes, that's usually way more painful for the most vulnerable people in South African society.
Geordine Hill-Lewis, Shadow Finance Minister of the Democratic Alliance Opposition Party, says the government engineered the crisis and has to solve it.
Debt has skyrocketed out of control over the last decade. And secondly, our electricity crisis. The failure by the government over many years to open up the electricity sector to private competition means that we have this load shedding crisis as well.
Some companies have already indicated they may not be able to reopen after the 21-day national lockdown to bring the spread of COVID-19 under control. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Malians voted yesterday in long-delayed parliamentary elections a day after the country's first coronavirus death. This is the country's first parliamentary poll since 2013, when President Ibrahim Babacar Keita's Rally for Mali party won a substantial majority. Yesterday's poll was to elect new MPs to the country's 147-seat National Assembly. The results are not expected for several days. A second round is scheduled for April 19th. All this as Mali confirmed 20 cases of the coronavirus as of Sunday. A Reuters witness said election turnout in the capital Bamako was low. Mali's main opposition leader, Soumaila Cisse, was ambushed last week while on the campaign trail in the country's northern region of Timbuktu. The attackers killed his bodyguard and took Cisse and six members of his delegation hostage. Reuters reports they have not been seen since. Despite the kidnapping, Cisse's Union for the Republic and Democracy Party called on all supporters to turn out and vote in large numbers. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says the coronavirus pandemic has had significant impact on children, as hundreds of millions of children across the globe now are out of school and many parents are out of their jobs. The organization warns the situation could lead to an increased rates of child abuse, exploitation, child labor, and gender-based violence. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has more.
COVID-19 has had a foothold across the globe and is now reaching countries that were already facing humanitarian crises because of conflict, natural disasters, and climate change. Christopher Tidy, emergency communications specialist for UNICEF Base in New York, says school closures not only limit access to learning, but to school nutrition, health program, clean water, and accurate information.
By some estimates, you have over a billion students that are out of school right now. And for children, obviously, having access to quality education is essential for their long-term development and well-being in the future. So that's a problem. Also, a lot of kids through schools get access to essential services like lunchtime feeding programs, information about how to stay healthy, different protection services, and so on. So when schools are closed, kids can lose access to those sorts of things as well.
He notes that many countries lack the resources to help children learn while at home, but others are engaging students online to study or through radio and television programming. Tidy says although hand washing with soap and the running water is the most effective way to stop the spread of the disease, only 3 out of 5 people around the world have access to basic hand washing facilities. He says 3 billion people do not have hand washing facilities with water and soap at home. In sub-Saharan Africa, 258 million people lack access to proper hand washing facilities. For example, he says almost 50% of urban South African residents do not have hand washing facilities at home. Tidy says health systems across the globe are overwhelmed with the increase in pandemic cases, which means there is less capacity for children who have other health concerns to get needed services. He notes there are already problems with getting children in African countries getting good quality health care services, and there are questions about whether some countries would be able to respond to COVID-19 outbreaks.
That's why I think the UN is especially worried about the pandemic significantly affecting countries that have weaker healthcare systems, that are lower income as well, so that families and government don't necessarily have the financial means to weather the crisis.
Tidy says UNICEF has launched an appeal for over $600 million from donors to support the global response to COVID-19 all over the world. He says the money will go a long way to support a range of programs for children, including trying to expand access to hand washing and hygiene services. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Drashen, in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
As the global village struggles with the coronavirus, Zimbabwe has recorded only a relative handful of cases to date. However, the country began a 21-day government-ordered lockdown today to contain the virus. Reporter Kudzaiza Nwashi has more.
Zimbabwe's government gradually introduced preventative measures to guard against the spread of coronavirus. As of Monday, only workers in essential services are allowed out of their homes, and the government says the army may be deployed to enforce the lockdown, which comes a few days after neighboring South Africa started its lockdown. President Emmerson Mnangagwa announced the lockdown on Friday evening.
We are worried that even as our numbers remain low, there is possibility of wider community spread and transmissions. Further, in about 2 months' time, winter will be upon us, creating conditions ideal for more infections. We thus need to take decisive measures now.
He mentioned the measures government will be taking.
Starting Monday, 30th March 2020, and subject to further review, Zimbabwe will be under a total lockdown for a period of 21 days. This means all our citizens are required to stay at home, except, of course, in respect of essential movements related to seeking health services, to the purchase and procurement of food and medicines.
There is a particular concern about the country's healthcare system. Over the past few years, Zimbabwe's economy has been battered by shortages of nearly all goods and soaring inflation. There is little foreign exchange to import drugs and medical supplies, and the public health system has been hit by a series of job actions by staff members who say inflation has eroded their pay.
To ensure that our hospitals are not overwhelmed and that other normal hospital services are not compromised, more separate treatment and isolation units and facilities will be established as designated by the Minister of Health and Child Care.
The President says government will work with universities to produce medical necessities, such as sanitizers and personal protective equipment, and to set up of isolation centers to use in the outbreak. The President has warned the government will not tolerate causing alarm on social media. He says government is coming up with legal means to deal with those it thinks have violated the rules. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
Despite its first cases of COVID-19 and repeated calls from the UN, US and European Union to stop fighting in Libya, there is no sign of a ceasefire in sight and hostilities are continuing. The International Rescue Committee is warning that an outbreak of the coronavirus could have a devastating impact on Libya. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Essam Omish, a medical doctor who is president of the Libyan American Alliance, about health challenges facing Libya with no central government and a fragile healthcare system.
I think any observer of the healthcare system in Libya recognizes not only the fragility of the system and the fact that we do not have a robust healthcare system in Libya that can handle a pandemic or a problem of this magnitude, but what is even more scary and more difficult is the fact that Libya currently does not have not only the infrastructure but also the readiness to be able to put in place plans and maybe even take the extra precautions that may overwhelm any healthcare system, let alone a healthcare system that doesn't have much capacity to it to begin with. And plus, Libya, in the current conditions it lives in, with a raging, ongoing civil war, it makes the ability to deliver healthcare services much less effective. Libya has several vulnerable groups. We have migrants, we have refugees, we have internally displaced individuals who don't have the ability to access healthcare, and these are in the hundreds of thousands. We have people who are already in need of humanitarian help. And on top of that, you have a war that requires gatherings of people, requires close contacts, requires, in fact, settings that are going to be very likely sources of the spread of disease. So from all angles, literally, it could decimate Libya, and that's what's the scary scenario, given what's coming. And the fact is that Libya, in the curve of corona, is in fact at the time where strict restriction of movement, strict precautions need to take place today in order to avert a disaster that can befall us in a few weeks. And so it's very critical.
Despite the disease having been declared a global pandemic and the call from UN Secretary General to stop all conflicts in the world, there is no sign of a ceasefire in sight, and hostilities actually are escalating dramatically in recent days. Are the two warring sides well prepared for an outbreak of the magnitude of COVID-19 in Libya?
Unfortunately, precisely the opposite. The escalation of conflict of recent has truly, truly jeopardized any efforts to put in place motions or mechanisms that allow us to contain the disease, let alone be able to handle it. I think it's very unfortunate that despite calls for a ceasefire, even prior to the pandemic, but despite that, the GNA, the Government of National Accord, has tried to accept every plan or every ceasefire that has been put in place from the days of Berlin and onwards. It has consistently been General Haftar who has refused any attempts towards a ceasefire or any attempts towards a path for a solution in Libya. And that, unfortunately, got exacerbated of late because of the indiscriminate shelling that has been continuing around the Libyan capital. And these are raging wars where no ability to any government, let alone a government with very weak infrastructure, to be able to handle any outbreak in the magnitude of COVID in Libya. What can be done is only limit the potential for any outbreak by having Libyans stay in their homes, by limiting the gatherings, by exercising all the best practices that have been discussed, you know, to try to minimize the spread of disease. But God forbid, if something happens in Libya, we are looking at very grave consequences, God forbid.
So what should the international community do differently to stop the fighting in Libya and help Libyan public health officials prepare for the COVID-19?
Very strong pressure on the supporters of these proxy wars in Libya to stop this nonsense. Libya practically today is the only warring spot in the world where people have not stopped in order to pay attention to this coming pandemic. And until and unless we have a willpower that is strong enough to enforce very strict ceasefire, I don't think we're going to go anywhere. However, it looks pretty bleak in terms of a real international will, but it has to be exercised. The UN Security Council came out talking about this yesterday. You know, the Secretary General spoke about this specifically. There's been talks and declarations by the State Department, by the UNSMIL, and so on and so forth. So people are putting it very high on the radar because of the outrageousness of the continuation of the war.
Police in Cameroon have begun arresting people who defy measures put in place to stop the spread of the coronavirus, which has so far infected 139 people in the Central African state. Police are sealing shops that exceed maximum numbers for customers, impounding vehicles that carry too many passengers, and this week arrested more than 50 prostitutes for sneaking into hotels used to isolate suspected cases. Mokedwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Jean-Claude Tila, the top government official in Fundi Division, the administrative unit where Yaoundé is located, says he was appalled to learn that people who have been isolated in hotels on suspicion of being carriers of COVID-19 are receiving nocturnal visitors. Tila says he ordered the arrest of 50 prostitutes as well as 13 women and 6 men who sneaked into hotels to meet their spouses.
We discovered that people put in quarantine were conniving with hotel agents to smuggle women into the hotel to sleep with them. We have arrested some of them. We have to work together to stop this virus.
Tila said he ordered all of the arrested persons to be put in isolation while the police have been instructed to find unauthorized hotel visitors who have been on the run. Authorities in Cameroon recently isolated more than 500 citizens and 70 foreigners in an attempt to stop the spread of the coronavirus. All of those quarantined flew into the Central African state on March 17th and 18th before the government closed the borders and suspended issuance of visas until further notice. However, 150 of those quarantined escaped from their hotels. The government is searching for them, as well as another 186 people who returned home from France and Italy on March 17 and refused to be isolated. Despite government warnings, officials say a majority of Cameroonians are not taking coronavirus seriously, and authorities are taking steps to enforce social distancing rules. Troops have shut down stores for allowing in too many customers, closed markets for not respecting hygiene norms, and stopped buses that carried too many passengers. Close to 400 taxis were ordered off the road in Yaoundé alone for transporting more than the maximum 3 passengers per vehicle. Taxi Drivers Union leader Ernest Vela says drivers will respect the restrictions if the government gives them subsidies, increased taxi fares, or reduced fuel prices.
They did not reduce price for fuel. We are struggling. Things are not really moving. We are unable to make it. It is more than us. When you put fuel of 10,000, you are unable to walk 3,000.
Cameroon's first case of COVID-19 was confirmed on February 9. Since then, confirmed cases have increased to 139, with 6 deaths reported. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaounde.
And that wraps up this special VOA Africa program. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. Thank you again for tuning in to the recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.